Accession number 17160, Reel 2.
Mr. Forbes Morgan, Reel 2.
This extra leave was given to us, and it was very welcome to many.
Would you have rescued enemy aircrew just the same as British aircrew?
Yes, yes, oh yes, yes, we would do. And, yes.
Did you actually do that?
Yes, one occasion we picked up a couple of Germans, and they were being attended to in the sick bay, and they spotted our rifles, which were kept behind them, one of the ammunition boxes, and they grabbed one, but our skipper saw this and quickly pulled his revolver out and stopped them from taking any further action. It was obviously they were going to try and hold us up and could have taken us back and with control of the launch and taken us back with them to as prisoners of war. But the quick action of our skipper spotting them was when we knew that they were the Germans, he put his revolver on, fastened it to his uniform, and because his quick action saved the day.
Whereabouts was that?
That was about mid-channel. Somewhere, that was about 1943, I think, early 43, yes. Yeah.
You're obviously doing this work with HSL 186 from in 42-44, because the Dieppe raid was August 43.
Oh, the Dieppe raid was August the 19th, 1942.
You didn't have anything to do with the Dieppe raid yourself?
No, I was on, strange enough, I was put on, I was on shore duty, waiting, because there were four boats on duty that day. We were as a standby. I was on another launch on standby. The four launches took part from Dover, and there were some took part from the launches from New Haven. Three of the launches from Dover, they were attacked and sunk, and some of the crews were taken prisoner of war. Others were killed. 186 survived. They were on their way. 186 had been given a position to as a addition. And they were on their way, and they saw on the horizon one of their HSL was on fire, and with the crews waving to them to come to their rescue. But the skipper of 186 signaled to say that he was going to the rescue of one of the launches, and a signal came back saying that he should continue with the search of their aircrew ditching, which he had to do, and he rescued a Canadian pilot. It was after he returned to base, and he was, the skipper was so annoyed not being able to go to the rescue of his the colleagues that he immediately got on to headquarters, and they told him that the decision was made to go to the rescue of the pilot because it took much more money to train a pilot than it did air sea rescue, 12 crew of an air sea rescue launch. That was the answer, and I believe to this day that the skipper, I'm not going to mention his name, but he had quite a... It hit him to hear this. It upset him very much, and I think it did for the rest of his life.
You mentioned that incident where you went to the rescue of the glider crew at the time of Arnhem. Do you remember any incident at the time of D-Day when that was on?
Yeah, D-Day, yes. We were off on the north side of D-Day, yes. We were out because there was... We didn't make a rescue on D-Day at all. But the aircraft was going over the firing, because the firing sort of increased as the time went on. But we were out from very early morning, we knew, because the crews further down, further bases further down, they were a little bit more involved in the D-Day than we were. Although we were right over the other side, because as it is known that the Germans thought that we were going to invade in the Cali area, and there was lots of activity when they saw any craft nearby the coast. But we had no incidents on that particular day, except... there was lots of dead bodies being coming along, which we discovered probably came from the boats that had been attacked or whatever.
You mean floating past?
Yes, yes, yes.
British or?
Well, Germans too, yes.
What would you do regarding the dead bodies?
Well, they were coming by so much that we usually we would have picked them up. But I'm afraid, you know, that the skipper made his decision that not to do it.
They were in uniform, were they?
Yes, we saw some German sailors, German, yeah. But the skipper made that because if we'd have had those bodies aboard, a number of them, we would have, as things were, we'd have had to have had them aboard for, until we were ordered to return to base. Normally, if it had been one, we would have picked it up. There were too many, and no action was taken.
About how many would you have seen, do you think?
Difficult.
Dozens?
There was all sorts of things floating by, you know. There was petrol cans, there was all sorts of things floating. It was difficult, so you couldn't, because, mainly if we were there, we'd rescue the injured or any others that's been ditched and We would have bought Natchez. That would have been the first priority.
Would the Germans respect RC rescue craft?
Well, no, they didn't. No, this is it. They in the early part of the, yeah, they were shooting us up, shooting the RC rescue launches up, and because that's when the yellow decks, which was an agreement as rescue craft. The Geneva Agreement said that all rescue craft would be painted yellow. It was the yellow deck markings was an easy target for the aircrafts, and all the decks were they're painted a battleship grey, and the launches numbers. Were yellow. We had the on the foredeck, and 'cause when the VHF squares remained. That was the red and white VH squares, which was very high frequency for ship to shore, ship or ship to aircrafts, the talk down. They remained, but due to the shoot ups we had to take precautions. More guns were put on after the Dieppe raid. Erlikon 20 millimeter Erlikon guns were put on the stern of the launches, and the single Lewis guns were replaced by twin Brownings in the turrets, and twin Vickers guns were put on either side of them. The wheelhouse. We were not classed as a man of war. If the guns had been placed on the foredeck, we would have been classed as a man of war. But by putting the guns either side of the wheelhouse, we were not. Then we only used, the orders were only use your guns if attacked. We never invited the aircraft, although sometimes it did happen.
Were you attacked?
Yes, on one occasion, but it went off very quickly. But we did on one occasion had a rescue on the Goodwin Sands at low tide on the Goodwin Sands. Two launches went out to hurricane had ditched on the sands, and it actually, the German aircraft had spotted it and came over and waggled its wings in a similar manner to our own aircraft, by which meant follow me. And he came round in a circle and leading us towards the Goodwin Sands, and our skipper said, right, well, you know, be ready, man your guns, but we'll go and see. It's obviously he's spotted some ditching, and we went along. We found it was quite right, and we launched the rubber dinghies and got the pilot off, and the German aircraft was flying around all the time, and after we got the pilot aboard and started off, he just came down and waggled its wings and off he went and pushed his cockpit and gave us a salute. And we had no trouble. We had to return the next day because it appeared that the hurricane had some very secret instruments aboard. But on this occasion, we went out. The salvage ship from Ramsgate was came out, and we had coverage of our own aircraft while the Navy, while the salvage ship went and dismantled all the instruments from the ditched hurricane, which was on the Goodwin Sands.
So the pilot was standing on the sand?
Well, the previous day, yes, he was waving, because it was quicksand, and that was the thing. We had to go round. There were two crews, actually. One of the crews, the launch launched their rubber dinghy and paddled towards the sand, and they went on the quicksand and nearly had trouble. Where they had to pull one of the chaps up quickly. But we went round on the other side, where it appeared that they may get to the rescue first. We went round the longer side and got to him with safety. But that was all part of good seamanship and knowing the knowledge of the Goodwin Sands, where the soft sand and how to test the soft sand before you went ashore.
How do you test it?
Well, you more or less if it starts, you put your foot down. If it starts sinking, you know you don't go any further. You wait until it's solid, you know, your more solid parts, you know, which is true. You go straight down.
So the Goodwin Sands have a section which are constantly above the surface, do they?
No, because you only see the Goodwin Sands on low tides. And exceptionally spring tides, low spring tides, and of course you see a bit more, but but it's very tricky. I mean for us, when we were out and on patrol and rescues, you had to watch the Goodwin Sands all the time because you could be ashore, because there's so many wrecks on the Goodwin Sands that they are very treacherous, of course. Very treacherous indeed.
Did it surprise you that this German pilot was so honourable?
No, not really. No. Because I think some of them realised that we'd picked their chaps up. But it took a long time before they realised that we were making rescues.
Would the British aircraft shoot up German air sea rescue craft?
No, they didn't have air sea rescue craft, high speed launchers as we did. They consisted of all sorts of patrol craft, even civilian craft they used to send out. For their rescues, they also had air sea rescue. They had the first air sea rescue floats. Air sea rescue floats that they had constructed by the end of the Battle of Britain period, because they were going to continue the fights. In the spring, or as Hitler ordered, the invasion of England was postponed until the spring of 1941, and they had all these air sea rescue floats manufactured and moored in the Channel, many of them broke loose and floated over to our coast, and we did use them to implement our rescue arrangements. Because with them making, seeing that they had these floats, we manufactured Air Sea Rescue floats made of steel. Theirs was made of concrete. Now the steel ones were a much better design altogether.
So they had floating concrete floats.
The Germans have concrete air sea rescue floats, and the RAF had the steel floats. But there was no known of anybody ever getting to the rescue floats and being rescued. So they were there really for the comfort of it was nice, the air crews used to say that it was nice to see them in case they did ditch, but usually we got to them before they got to. It was very difficult to get. There were occasions where an aircrew floated past the floats in their dinghies, couldn't get to them. Also, navigational buoys were used as a rescue. All navigational buoys had food and other rescue first aid in case any of the crew could make it to one of the buoys. And we did on one occasion pick a rescue. We hadn't been sent to the rescue, but we were going out on a rendezvous patrol when we came across this pilot who had got to the one of the navigational buoys and got inside, and because he was very glad to see us, because with the bell keep on ringing, he was nearly stone deaf. So that was successful.
Why were these German concrete floats so inferior?
The German floats themselves were, everybody laughed about them because they said they would sink. But because most of the, even us, we our Mulberry Harbour was made out of concrete, and also rescue, landing barges were made of concrete. So they were a success, but it was the anchorage. They didn't have the right type of anchorage, and because they used to drift high tides, and the anchorage used to give, and that's when they used to float over, But that Churchill did give orders when the very first one was spotted by one of our patrolling aircraft, that he gave orders to the Navy to go and bring one in, because Mr. Churchill, because he never trusted the Germans, and even during the Battle of Britain, they had their first Red Cross float planes, which were rescuing their pilots, and Mr. Churchill always thought that they had radio aboard and were signalling to their patrols, and because he ordered our people to shoot them down. Likewise, he ordered the Royal Navy to go in and pull one of these German air sea rescue floats back, and they did. They towed it back to Dover Harbour. There's photographs of that one.
What kind of crew did HSL 186 have?
Well, it was the skipper, who was an officer, a first-class coxswain, who was usually a sergeant, a flight sergeant, or a warrant officer. The second-class coxswain was a corporal. Then there was the medical orderly. There were two engineers. The first engineer could be a sergeant, flight sergeant, a second engineer from up to LAC, because they were all highly skilled engineers, in marine engineers and aero engineers. The crews were, say, motorboat crews who manned the guns. There were six. There was one in each turret, one on each side of the well back, either side of the wheelhouse, and two at the Ehrlichan gun. Later on, he's coming towards D-Day, they put an additional 0.5s midships. But they varied. They varied. They were very heavily armed in the Channel area, but they varied in different parts of the country where they were not, you know, subject to attacks as they would have been to in the Channel area.
Before we talk about going to the Far East, any other incidents that happened to you with HSL 186?
There's so many little things, you know, big things. Maybe many times when I right over the coast and got shelled. Lucky enough, because if you could, well, it was again. We could manoeuvre quite fast, and this was the thing. If you're making a pickup, you had to break it very, very quickly, because the gun crews they would get their position and get their gun in position. So you got to the crew and pulled them aboard straight away, and after you left their dinghies and anything else, and just just full speed ahead. You didn't make you always made a zigzag a getaway. But there were times when the skipper had given the coxswain orders to to turn to starboard, say, then one would be a shell would be exploded where we'd been, and then